D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5. The Game, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. We are live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators versus Avalanche tonight at, yes, 8:30 p.m. on TNT, a nationally televised game, hence why the game starts so much later than usual. Pre-game starts at 7:30 right here on 102.5 The Game. Barry Trotz will join us in 1 hour at 5 o'clock here at Barrel House for our weekly conversation. Trevor Maddich will join us in the next segment. But we are discussing the Titans' win on Sunday against the Browns and whether it was good or bad in the long run. Derek is on team winning is good. Mm-hmm. Willie is on team winning is good, asterisk, to an extent. I am on team tank. What about you? 615-737-1025. Let's go to Trey on our phone line. Trey, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Good.
Hey, Trey.
Hey, I want to say that I would want them to try to win every game. That's because I see improvement. I see improvement on the special teams. The special teams is playing dynamic, I believe. The defense has come around. Now I can see the real head busters out there. We got some real, real good head busters out there. Now, if the offense come around, we can do pretty good. I'm not really worried about, you know, what plays we're going to pick and stuff like that. But what I do want the Titans to do, and I hope they're listening, is get us a receiver in-house. Somebody from Vanderbilt, because every time I listen to the radio, oh, my God, he caught the ball. I want one of them he caught the ball guys. We need a good receiver, right? Somebody from, like, Alabama. You know, they got some studs over there. Alabama, Tennessee, even Vanderbilt. We need to stay in-house and get some good in-house players. And, yeah, I want them to try to win because we are improving. We really is. But y'all have a good evening, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Trey.
Trey wants a receiver who can catch the ball.
That's it. Hey, give me one of those guys.
Can we find him one?
He caught the ball guy.
I think that's the dilemma the fan base is in. You want to see improvement of your team. You want to see some of these young guys, Ellick, DK, Gunner, Cam, you know, Skoronski, some of these guys that you feel are going to be with you moving into this next stadium. You want those guys to show improvement, but then you want a higher pick. So it's this dilemma I think the fan base is in. And some of them are just saying, you know, I just want a high pick because that at least that may assure that we can get multiple picks out of that pick, or we can just pick a guy that we love high. But they do need a receiver. And the more and more I look at it, I mean, Carnell Tate, man, that kid's special. He is special.
From Ohio State.
That kid is special. And it's not because Jeremiah Smith's on the other side. This kid would be special at any university he was at. There's just something it's like he has this mixture of Higgins and, you know, Julio, and it's just, he doesn't do anything bad. Like, his routes are clean. He's a hand catcher. He goes up and get the ball. He's physical. He run through catches. He's great at combat catches. I don't know what he's going to run in the 40. He seems like a fast guy. But if I'm the Titans, I would want the number one pick just to be able to trade out of it low enough to still be high, but low enough to get Carnell Tate. This kid's going to be special, man. I that's just my opinion. In Ohio State, but this is what you see from Ohio State. Over the years, receiver after receiver after receiver. And he's just another line of great receivers that are going to come into the NFL and I think going to have success. And then, lo and behold, after that, Jeremiah Smith. So, yeah, they need one of those guys. And I think Carnell Tate is the guy, at least in my book.
One texter says, Trey must have missed the SEC championship game and all those Alabama receivers getting locked down, LOL.
Yeah, Alabama Williams. He's not. I thought that kid was gonna be good.
Interesting.
He's not tough enough. That's what I'm realizing now. A bunch of talent. Talent. I mean, his talent is through the roof. The kid's just not tough enough. It doesn't seem like he has that dog in him. That for whatever reason, you saw it last year, and it's almost like he just took his foot off the gas and was like, "I'm good. I'm gonna cruise through this." And that's what I mean. he don't have dog in him, because you would want another. You would be hungry to get out there and double down on what you did the previous year. And I'm not sure if that's what he has.
One texter, Taylor, says, team winning is good is such old school Dabo Sweeney stubborn thinking. Get with the times, people. Tim says, losing is an illness. Once your team is infected, it's tough to cure. So one vote for team winning is good, the other for team tank.
Well, and that's what we talked about with the Predators.
Yes.
You know, should you go into this, you know, rebuild and you know, have to deal with the losing right. possibly coming? Or do you want to continue to try to win hockey games? That's a dilemma that, as a GM, you got to think about, because that locker room, because it's going to affect the locker room.
No question. Barry Trotz has talked repeatedly about that dilemma. And he is definitely for the culture. And it has been proven that if you tank and you're really bad, you can get into what they call the vortex, right? It just gets harder and harder to get out of it. You are seeing some stories of people crawling out of it and now saying, ha-ha, I'm glad we did it. Now that it's over, we went. But there are other times where it's just, you think you're going to be out of it, and it's another 2 or 3 years because the culture is so damaged. Mm-hmm. You're just in a habit of losing. And the young players that you're drafting that are supposed to save you, they have bad habits because exactly. they have entered a bad culture.
And that's why, you know, when you're listening to Jeffrey Simmons, he said it.
Yes.
Jeffrey said it. Like, listen, we got to bring in somebody that's going to be a culture changer, a guy that's going to lead this team. So if he's saying it, there's no room for – now, if you're a bad team, you lose, fine. But there's no room to lose on purpose in this league, no matter what.
And the thing about the NFL that's different is you can turn it around quicker. You mm-hmm. can get more immediate help from the draft mm-hmm. than you can most years in hockey. It exactly. takes time because everybody you draft is 18. Mm-hmm. You're drafting 22-, 23-year-old players a lot of times, and some of them are ready to go. They can help you quick. And if not the first year, then the second couple years.
One texter says, the game I saw on Sunday, it looked like both Cleveland and the Titans were trying to tank, but neither one knows how to win by losing.
No,
there were some rough stretches in that game. Yeah. It was a slow-moving game.
But I don't
there
think
were some fun plays.
It was just two bad teams going yeah. against one another.
Yeah.
One bad on defense and one bad on offense.
It all evened out.
It all evened itself out.
Damian says, maybe it's not how many picks the Titans have, but how well Borgonzi picks, so winning may not be such a bad thing. And I know Willie is going to bring up how many bites at the apple statement.
Yeah.
Are you going to bring it up?
How many darts are you going to get to throw at the dartboard?
Yeah, I mean, how many analogies do we have? We got to shake it up, right? You can't go to the same one every time. So the bites at the apple, the throws at the dartboard. We need to come up with a few more.
Yeah, we got to come up with some more.
One texter says, my Pittsburgh Pirates have been tanking for 30 years.
Who's been tanking for 30 years?
One texter says, my Pittsburgh Pirates have been tanking for 30 years.
Yeah. They don't try.
And see you yeah. see what it gets them? Yeah. This yeah. right here.
But you're right, Willie. It's so much different in the NFL than the NHL, because in the NFL, the players you draft are hopefully helping you immediately mm-hmm. versus in the NHL when, by most accounts, those players need a year or two before they are up to speed. But we will continue to take your thoughts on that. But let's keep it in the AFC South. The Indianapolis Colts have signed a literal grandpa. Not just because Philip Rivers is 44 years old, but because he is actually a grandpa. He has 10 children. As a reminder, you may have heard that once or twice over the past 24 hours or so. He has 10 children, and he has one grandchild. So congratulations to Philip Rivers. Grandpa could be back in the NFL. He has signed with the Indianapolis Colts' practice squad. He is unretiring. He has not played since the 2020 season. But Daniel Jones is out for the season. Riley Leonard's status is uncertain. Anthony Richardson is injured. So the Colts need a body.
It's bleak.
And here comes 44-year-old grandpa, which is such a strange thing to say. Does anybody know a 44-year-old grandpa?
Oh, yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there.
Yeah, I know sure they're out there. I just don't know any of them.
Well, now we know one.
You remember Philip?
Yes. Now we know one. Philip Rivers.
So
I think it happens a little more than you think. That's on the young side for sure. But
I do want to mention this, because I know some of you are going to text us, 615-737-1025, and say, what about Ryan Tannehill? Ryan Tannehill has played more recently than Phillip Rivers. I don't know how I found this, but Ryan Tannehill did an interview with a publication called The Escapist last month. And he said this, quote, "I think that chapter is closed. I think last year that was where I was at. If the right opportunity came up and was right for our family, staying in shape and staying ready. I had plenty of calls, but nothing ever felt like the right opportunity that I was looking for. That was last NFL season. At this point, I think that ship has sailed for me." So Ryan Tannehill has unofficially, officially retired. So that is why Ryan Tannehill was not called by the Indianapolis Colts.
And consider this. It's been a while since Ryan Tannehill played, right? It just seems like he last played in 2023. Phillip Rivers has not played since 2020.
5 years.
That is an eternity. Man. It's one thing that he's 44, but having not played since 2020, that's a lot.
He's fresh.
That's a gap. He does have fresh legs.
Right on cue, as I was reading that, somebody texted in, why would the Colts sign Rivers instead of Tannehill? So well, there
I,
you
I,
go.
I think Tannehill is at a space now, and I believe like a lot of guys get, majority of the guys do, where – like, that first year is of retirement is like, okay, I still can play. If say if you retire like Ryan Tannehill, and I know he wanted to still get back out there, I can still play. I can still do it. That first year. Ryan's been, what, 2 years now, going on 2 years? So that first year. But then the second year is like, I think your ego kind of settles down now. Your ego slowly fades away. Why? Because nobody's cheering for you. You're doing home life. It's just every day you're hanging out with your friends. So that world starts to get removed from you, you know, slow. At least for me, that's how it was. And then that second year was like, I'm good now. You know, I'm fine. But, you know, for him, he's in that space where I think now their family has set into what they're going to be moving forward. And his wife and his family has gotten used to him being there now and helping. And then all of a sudden now, and it seems like he's a great dad, great husband. All of a sudden now he just can't leave that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because now they've gotten used to him being. Before
oh, yeah.
it was, they weren't used to him being at home.
Right.
You know, and he was still trying to feel his way through it. Now he's like, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm settled and I'm all right.
By the way, should Phillip Rivers start on Sunday, it would mark 1,800 days since his last NFL game, the third most days between starts among quarterbacks who did not play between them.
He had a really good game his last game.
1,800 days.
So at least he can hang his hat on that.
Give me a minute.
Okay. But here's what I was going to bring up. The other side of that coin. It's like, for me, right, there's always somebody being a smart aleck going, hey, Willie, you're a lefty pitcher. You want to come out? Can you still get a couple outs? There's still part of me that's like, yeah, if I got in shape. You know, you're just wired that way, right? Uh-huh. Like if somebody called you right now, D. Mason, said, like this is a classic example of desperate times call for desperate measures. Like the Colts have no other choice. They're not like, oh, yeah, if this happens, we'll just call Phillip Rivers. Like this has just happened. They're like, what do we do? Who can we call? And this is the best they can come up with.
Okay.
But if they called you, the Titans, and said, look, we got XYZ out. We don't have enough guys. Can you suit up? Like Chris Mason still will go in on occasion. I don't know if he's done it this year, but the last few years, there's been a day or two at practice where they needed a goalie to go out there.
He can do it.
He still loves going out there. He's in great shape. He puts the gear on. He goes up and he takes shots.
Uh-huh.
And it's, I mean – you wouldn't want to go in a game right now necessarily, but if he did, like I think he would be like, "All right,
bring it on,
bring it on." So how would you feel about that? Like part of you would want to do it, wouldn't they?
Yeah, because again, because
you're wired that way.
As I explained, you know, that ego got set aside because
yeah,
it was, but then now it's not. It's just like, I wonder if I could go out there.
Want to find out?
No disrespect to the guys that are doing it now, but I would tell you, hey, listen, we can't do a physical because I'm a flunk the physical. I got a strained hamstring right now. So
we'd have to get those logistics.
Exactly. We have to get those worked out first.
I have the list.
And my kids are grown, so yeah, I can go back.
So Phillip Rivers, if he starts on Sunday, it would mark 1,800 days since his last NFL game, the third most days between starts among quarterbacks who did not play between them. Please help me if I butcher this last name. 1960, Frank Tripucka?
Yes.
Kelly Tripucka. There's a Kelly Tripucka.
Of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
Frank Tripucka of the Denver Broncos. 2,827 days. John Reeves of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in 1987.
Wow.
2,149 days. Philip Rivers would be at 1,800. Todd Bowman of Jacksonville in 2010.
Yes, I remember
1,757. Yes. Chris Miller of Denver in 1999, 1,435.
But those guys were playing football. Like, they just weren't in games, right? They were on a team, right? They weren't out of the league. Like, John Reeves was in the USFL. Mm-hmm. He was a really good
I don't know the answer to that.
The only reason I remember, because I was in Florida at the time, and Steve Spurrier was the coach, mm-hmm. and John Reeves was one of his quarterbacks. They had a really bandit ball, it was called. Like, the early days, you know, Steve Spurrier always had a fun offense, throwing the ball all over the place. He was one of their guys. So he came back. 87 was the strike year.
Yes.
So he probably came in and got in a game. Mm-hmm. So there's some special circumstances there. This is unprecedented. Right? Just being out of the league for that long at 44? What's that going to look like?
Well, we could see on Sunday, 615-737-1025. We will pick up this conversation after Trevor Maddich. He will join us coming up next to talk about the college football playoff. We can ask Trevor what he thinks about 44-year-old Philip Rivers potentially suiting up on Sunday. 615-737-1025. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Financing options are available to make your remodel easier than you think with Bax Homeworks. Get a free estimate now at BAXHomeworks.com. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 1025. The game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in. No, not Cher, but Trevor Maddich, who is brought to you by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Hi, Trevor. How are you?
I am not sure, Adam, but I do believe in life after love. So there's that.
All right. There you go.
There you go.
On the record.
Yes, a romantic Trevor Maddich. Trevor, of course, we've spent a lot of time over the past couple of days, really the past couple of weeks, talking about the college football playoff rankings. But now we have the bracket. And I'm wondering how important you think it is that Tulane and JMU give Ole Miss and Oregon competitive games, because if they get blown out, you know that you are going to hear plenty of people crying about how the Group of Five doesn't deserve to be in the college football playoff. I believe I heard your colleague Paul Feinbaum even say earlier today that he wants to get rid of the Group of Five schools in the college football playoff. So again, my question, how important is it for Tulane and JMU to have competitive first round games, even if they don't win?
Adam, it's very important that they do it for exactly that reason. I mean, this is the angriest I've ever seen college football fans about the committee since the 14 playoff started back in 2014, whatever that was. And I mean, it's not just anger that their team was left out. It is vitriolic. It is acrimonious, and it is well-deserved. Notre Dame fans are super chapped by being bounced out in the last ranking. And it's not that they should have been in ahead of Miami or even Alabama. I think the committee got it right from that standpoint. But it's the timing of it to keep Notre Dame in the playoff, in range, at number 10, which is just inside the cutoff this year for at-large bids. And then when they didn't do anything to change their resume, Miami didn't do anything to change their resume, the committee just swapped them and put Miami in and Notre Dame out. And so Notre Dame is just furious about it. They're fed, and they're right to be. Not necessarily that they're not in, but although they're mad about that too. But because there was just a swap with no apparent rationale that anybody can figure out. And so when you take that, and then you say, now, Notre Dame at number 11 right now, one spot out of at-large. And who's in? James Madison is in. Tulane is in. These are teams that are not ranked in the top 12. BYU is at number 12. Tulane is at number 20. James Madison is number 24. The reason they're there, of course, is because they're two of the top five highest-ranked conference champions, and therefore they get automatic bids. But a lot of people are saying, no, 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 not anymore. And I think this might be the proper catalyst to make that happen, or if not proper, I think the most powerful catalyst that we've seen. Now, having said that, I'm against it. I think we need to respect conference championships, and I like the way that they give five automatic berths to the top five highest-ranked conference champions. I think that's important for college football as a whole to keep regions all around the country involved in the national race, and this is how you do it. But at the same time, the anger is so directed, and it is so red hot that if the group of five is going to get bounced from a standpoint of automatic berths now, for a conference champion, then I can see it happening now if it's ever going to happen.
Trevor, how do you feel about Notre Dame making the decision to withdraw from any bowls to, I would say, protest the decision made by the College Football Committee? How do you feel about Notre Dame's decision there?
Adam, I understand why they're furious, but I disagree with the decision. It seems from the outside looking in like a decision made in the heat of the moment. And so to say, okay, then we're just withdrawing is one thing. But then in some ways, it damages themselves because teams use 2 weeks of bowl practice to get work in for their younger players, to get their depth pieces in, to get their young guys that aren't even depth pieces yet, but they're very talented and they want to get them more practice to be ready for spring ball so that they're ahead of the game when spring practice starts. Bowl practice is very important for teams and programs because of this. Plus, in bowl games, you get a lot of these guys into those games too. And for Notre Dame to take that away from themselves just seems like it was not the right decision to make. Now, I respect Marcus Freeman, their coach. I understand word coming out of South Bend that the players realize that some of their key players will be opting out to get ready for the NFL draft, and they don't want to go into bowl season with a completely changed team. All of that stuff, okay, fine. But it just seems to me that it was a decision made in an emotional moment, and I don't think it was the right decision.
Yeah, I'm with you, Trevor, on that one because, beyond all of the other stuff, the money, it's the practices. The time you get with the players, the development you get with some of these younger guys, and they enjoy, possibly going to a bowl game, a city or state they've never been to. So I just thought that was immature, and I think it's going to hurt, Notre Dame from a PR standpoint moving forward. Now, I know they put in this new amendment where, they're going to be able to get in, which I think they strong-armed everybody anyway, but I think they're going to take a big PR hit. Because it's almost as if, okay, we're not involved, then we're going to take our ball and we're going to go home, regardless of who it may hurt development-wise underneath us. We're just going to take our ball and convince the players that this was the right thing to do. But with that being said, I'm not sure if you are a Heisman voter, Trevor. If you are, then I know you got to try to keep things real tight. But when you look at these finalists, do you think perhaps Diego – if indeed he doesn't win and it's close, do you think possibly there could have been this, we seen Mendoza play last and he did give us a Heisman moment within the Big Ten Championship?
Yeah, let me kill two birds with one stone here. Mm-hmm. Diego Pavia should win the Heisman. Mm-hmm. Okay, and that tells you that I don't have a vote. I moved to Nashville in 2006, and there was already a glut of Heisman voters in the region. So, I don't have an ability to get it right now. But I think really Diego Pavia should win it. People are talking about Fernando Mendoza, and he would be deserving if he does win it. Because, without him last year, the Hoosiers went to the playoff. This year, he took them to the next level, went undefeated, beat Ohio State to win the Big Ten championship, and now they're the number one seed in the playoffs. So he did a lot of great things. He's deserving of the Heisman. But I think Diego Pavia did more with less and elevated a program that had been farther down at the time than Indiana was and brought him up to national prominence. And in doing so, he didn't just, win on the field. I mean, they're 10-2 this year in the SEC, for goodness sake. But he also elevated the program into the culture of Nashville. And guys, we've talked about this, but I think it bears reiterating that with the music scene and the celebrities and all the big business and all the healthcare stuff and all the stuff that's going on in Nashville at the highest levels, and forever Vanderbilt football was down over here and nobody paid any attention to it. Well, now Vanderbilt is elevated into that culture. Vanderbilt is a star in its own right now, football, and Diego Pavia is the star of stars of Vandy football and in the culture from that standpoint, and especially because the Tennessee Titans are down and the Predators aren't doing super great, all of a sudden you've got Vanderbilt leading the way from a football standpoint. And I think that the Heisman going to the most outstanding player in college football, that's the charter. It's not the quarterback on the best team, which it seems to be most years, right? Or, you know, the best player or the one with the biggest stats. It just says most outstanding. And I think when you talk about a combination of what he did on the field between the lines and what he did for the entire program, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that Diego Pavia should win the Heisman this year.
Now, Trevor, when you look at the top four teams or top four seeds, obviously Indiana has proven because they beat the number one team in the country that they should be the number one team in the country now and the number one overall team in the playoffs. Do you believe they are the best team at this point, or do you look at the way Georgia, you know, dismantled Alabama or how they dismantled Texas weeks before that? Do you look at them as a team that's just now started peaking and they may end up being the best team in college football at this point?
Yeah, Darius, that's a great question, because Georgia started the year with a lot of identifiable flaws that opponents took advantage of. Their secondary was giving up a lot of big plays. They were awful at getting to the quarterback from a standpoint of pass rush. And their offensive line was banged up. Their running back room was banged up. They weren't running the ball as well as you expect. But starting about midseason, Georgia started to put it together. And now they are one of the best teams, although I still would go with Indiana as the best team. And I think the biggest difference remains the pass rush. Georgia's done better at getting after the quarterback. Certainly they got all over Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson in the SEC championship game. But Indiana has got six games where they rushed for over 300 yards, most in the nation, right? So they run the ball well. They had over 100 yards rushing in the third quarter. By the time the third quarter was being played, they had over 100 yards rushing against Ohio State's great defense to go with the passing attack that we expect. So all those things are there for Indiana. But the difference, the big difference, is that all year long and continuing now, I think Indiana's front is much more disruptive. Ohio State quarterback Julian Sain is one of the least stacked quarterbacks in college football this year and had one of the highest completion percentage in college football, in part because of that. But Indiana's defensive front overwhelmed the Buckeyes' offensive line, got after Julian Sain, and it's one of the reasons the Buckeyes only scored, 10 points in the championship game. Indiana quietly has one of the best secondaries in all of college football. And so, you know, we think about Mendoza and the passing attack, but this is an incredibly balanced team that performs at a very, very high level in every phase of the game. And I would say that Indiana right now would edge out Georgia for that post.
Trevor, let's take that further, that point, because, you know, I think Vanderbilt definitely, from last year to this year, found a lot more players in depth and was much better from top to bottom. How did Indiana do it? Like, how did they get – because last year, I think we can remember, when they played Ohio State, they were just a little bit overmatched. They weren't quite there. It's same thing in the playoffs when they lost at Notre Dame. But they have closed that gap and maybe even overtaken them. Where did they find the guys?
They found the right guys. You know, and I think you start with what Texas Tech did, because that's sort of famous in college football now. They brought in all kinds of transfers, and everything was great. And their defensive front, especially their defensive line, was $7 million of NIL money they invested. And they went from one of the worst defensive fronts in college football last year to one of the best this year, right? Well, Indiana did the same thing when Kurt Cignetti came in from James Madison. He brought a lot of his best players from James Madison. And it wasn't just that these guys were superstar talents. They were very talented, of course, but they understood the culture. And they understood the schemes. And they came in and meshed right away as a unit last year. You know, all these guys, and the guys that didn't come from James Madison weren't jealous of the guys from James Madison. They fell in behind him from a standpoint of buying in to the culture that they helped establish in the locker room. And then this year, they got even better, Indiana did, because of, you know, you bring in Mendoza. Last year, Curtis Rourke, a quarterback, he went to the NFL, right? Well, now you're talking about a potential Heisman winner and possibly first pick in the draft in Mendoza if he comes out this year. And so, you know, they've actually gotten better. But it's not just that they've overwhelmed with talent. Much like Texas Tech, they've got the right guys in. And those guys were not just scheme fits, but culture fits. And that's, I think, what they've done. And I think from the standpoint of Cignetti, this is his second year. And I think the fact that he, in his first year, made the playoff and his second year went undefeated and is ranked number one right now goes a long ways towards explaining why coaches at places like Penn State and LSU got fired this year. Because NIL donors are saying, look, we're kicking in all this money, and then you want another million from me next year for the quarterback and another million after that for the quarterback. And I'm looking over at Indiana, and in the second year, they just won the Big Ten and went undefeated. You look at Mike Elko at Texas A&M. In his second year, they are now in the playoff. You look at the coaches at James Madison and Tulane. They're in their second year at those places, and they are now conference champions in the playoff. And other, I think, boosters, if they're kicking in all this money, are saying, look, coaches led by Kurt Cignetti are doing it right now. And if you're not doing it right now, you're gone. Because I want to give my money to someone who will. And I think the concept of patience and building a program is now obliterated. And you can thank Cignetti for a large part of that.
So real quick, Trevor, because we're a little short on time. Would you prefer, if you were to change the format, because everybody that's complaining has their own, well, this is what they should do. But straight 16 or a play-in to the current kind of status?
Yeah, I think, Willie, it's a great point. I think that either I would just go with – actually, I would go with the play-in because that creates another level of drama in what would be a straight 16 anyway. And so, you know, the Big Ten has suggested that on the week of championship weekend, you have a play-in game in the Big Ten, you know, and so you end up with extra stuff. And so as long as we expand the playoff to at least 16, I think that's a good thing, but I'd rather see a play-in because I love drama.
Trevor Maddich has been our guest on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. He is brought to you each week by Houston Clinic Orthopedics, when experience matters. Trevor, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Thanks, Adam. Thanks, guys.
615-737-1025. I have another giveaway. If you want a pair of tickets to see Belmont Men's basketball take on UIC at the Curb
9-1 Belmont.
The 9-1 Belmont men's basketball team take on UIC at the Curb Event Center on Saturday. Be caller number 2 at 615-737-1025. Caller number 2 will win a pair of tickets to see Belmont take on UIC at the Curb Event Center on Saturday. 615-737-1025. David James will take those calls. He's back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025. The game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you live at Bridgestone Arena. Predators and Avalanche tonight at 8:30. Yes, I said 8:30. Right here on 1025. The game pregame starts at 7:30. Barry Trotz will join us at the top of the hour. During our segment with Trevor Maddich, Derek, we received a text from someone who said that they disagree with the two of you totally on Notre Dame, saying that Notre Dame made the right call opting out of bowl season. This is a long text, so I am going to attempt to summarize it. The texter said, in part, you weren't in those rooms, and you don't know the conversations they had, so how can we sit here and say that it was a mistake for them for practices? I will quote Allen Iverson. We're talking about practice, not the playoffs, which are important, but practice that's developing nothing.
That's a person that never played sports, so I'm not going to answer that question. Go ahead, move next.
That's it?
Yeah, that's it. I have no
that's
reason.
That's it?
That's it. It's like talk to a brick wall. I mean, they have their – I can't – there's nothing that I can say that would convince someone that says that playing is the best thing. So that person has their opinion. I get it. It is what it is, but I played the sport, and I know a lot of other people that played it that they would say, hey, listen.
Well, Trevor laid it all out.
Exactly.
Trevor laid it out perfectly. That, yeah. And we said it. it probably felt really good for the coach to go up there and say, screw you guys.
We're not going. We're not going to take it. No, we're not going to take it. We're taking our golden ball and we're going home.
I'm telling you, by now, he has got to be going, I don't know about that. Because developing guys, player, and you have a game. It's not like you just get to practice, you don't play a game. You get to play a game.
But it's the message.
It's the message.
Exactly.
Yes.
Your head coach can't say nothing about winning football games and playing football games no more. I don't want to hear Coach Freeman say anything about winning football games or how important playing football is, because you just had another opportunity to play football and your ass said, no, give me my golden ball and we're going home. If you think that's the right thing to do, come on.
What kind of life lesson?
Yeah, exactly. Like, seriously. Like, that's why I say, man, whatever.
I would like to point out a quote from Notre Dame athletic director Pete Bevacqua, because he did a news conference today. Quote, we were shocked, mystified what happened Sunday. We had one of the most dominant 10-game runs in the history of college football. Please. Let me read to you their opponents. Purdue, 2-10. Arkansas, 2-10. Boise State, group of five. NC State, 7-5. USC, 9-3. Boston College, 2-10. Navy, group of five. Pitt, 8-4. Syracuse, 3-9. Stanford, 4-8.
It was a cakewalk for them.
One of the most dominant 10-game runs in the history of college football.
There's a lot of history to college football.
Absolutely.
And I'll put – I mean, come on.
It's not.
That's the thing. Like, when you can't say stuff like that. You're an athletic director. It's Hunter Yurecek. Mm-hmm. How can you float something like that out there and expect people to go, oh, man, yeah, he's right, man.
Yeah.
He's right. That's one of the most – so what's his name? Bevacqua?
Uh-huh.
Pete Bevacqua.
Bevacqua. You think you're going to float that out there and people are going, oh, yeah, yeah, well, that's a – he's right.
Yeah, that's a tough schedule.
Notre Dame athletic director, that's one of the most dominant runs I've ever seen in college football history. Oh, man, I looked it up, and he's right. Are you kidding me? That is so far from the truth. Yeah. How does he even think that he can throw that out there and not get laughed at?
And everybody's still laughing at him. That's – again, I understand this may be the person, if they're Notre Dame fan, but your program just took a hit reputation-wise. And then they went in and strong-armed the committee to make sure they do get in. I hope the Aztecs don't win number five games next year. Because, again, the life lessons you are teaching those young men, when you try to tell – I guarantee you one of their other players, if you ask one of those, we would be ragging on a player. If a Notre Dame player or another player opted out of playing in a bowl game, but his team went, we'd be crucifying that player. But it's all right. If Notre Dame chooses to do it and take their golden ball and go home, and now whoever the bowl committee is, they got to try to find another team. Oh, they'll find another team. Don't worry about it. But they got to try to find another team now. And you've taken away the opportunity for these young men to continue to – isn't that what it's about, Willie? Developing your players?
Yes.
Isn't that what it's about?
And you know what?
Texter?
We rip on the bowl games because, hey, yeah, they're not the same. And mm-hmm. – If you win, it's great. If you lose, but it is a fun experience.
Yeah.
It's a life experience. You won't forget going to it. Look, I always tell my story about the NIT. Mm-hmm. We won the NIT when I was a freshman at Vanderbilt. And no, it's not the same thing as winning the NCAA tournament or even going to the NCAA tournament, which we did the next year.
They don't play one shining moment when you win the NIT.
They don't.
They play one glimmering moment.
Right. And we
one shiny moment,
and
but
we,
not one shining moment.
And we lost in the first round, and it was still satisfying. We made the tournament, right? But the NIT was an experience that we will never forget. We won five straight games. We played at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. We cut nets down. It was fun. And did it mean the same thing? No, but it was fun. And if our coach had said, we're not going to the NIT, mm-hmm. no, we should have been the NCAA. I'm not going, which some teams have done, right?
Yeah.
Bobby Kremins for Georgia Tech did that one year. I'm so glad that we did it mm-hmm. because I have a ring. We had great experiences. We stayed out all night in New York after we won. We didn't sleep. We got back to the airport, and there were thousands of people waiting for it. It was fun. It was a good experience. And Notre Dame, I don't know what the experience would be at their bowl. Mm-hmm. But some of their players would have a life experience that they would not otherwise have.
What year was that?
1990.
Okay, who had more fun in New York City? Willie Donick in 1990 or Diego Pavia on Saturday?
Oh, Diego.
Diego for sure.
Now, Willie did have some fun. Willie had some fun. But I think Diego.
Quickly, the clubhouse
is Diego.
Quickly, let's go to Roy, who's a Notre Dame fan on our phone line. Roy, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, all right, I appreciate you guys making my call. I probably would have played the game too. I mean, even though probably some of the players wouldn't, but I got the impression from them Notre Dame, that it was players that had this choice too, not just the coaches. I don't think the coaches just said, hey, we're not, or the athletic director. I think it was a team choice. All right, so I don't like the bashing of Notre Dame. The reason why is, you know, if Notre Dame was undefeated, what was the highest rating they could get? You guys know?
No.
What's the highest rating? Fifth. Even if they're undefeated, they're not allowed to get a first round.
That's right.
I
remember that from last year.
They're penalized for not being in the conference. Also, when Notre Dame was losing to Miami by 3, Alabama was getting drilled by Florida State. Alabama has some, you know, they got 3 losses. I'd rather have Vanderbilt over Alabama, even though they lost to Alabama. I mean, it was a close game. So, yeah, I mean, there's points of everything. Miami could have won their conference. Their conference is crappy. Also, you guys keep picking at Notre Dame's schedule. Most of those teams are Big Ten or the ACC or the old former Pac-10. But here's the thing. Those schedules are made years in advance. Last year, Syracuse was good. This year, they're awful, okay? So you can't really blame them for that. Now, if they played Georgia State or somebody like Alabama or Auburn did or all these other teams, I disagree with them not playing. But, you know, I understand probably they're going to lose some of the players that are not going to be in there. But if you look at the draft or at the betting odds, Notre Dame, I've been a fan all my life, and I watched them. And that team that's there this year is better than their team last year. Okay, so they could, and they're rated like 4th in the betting odds to win the whole thing. So I understand they got job. This is the way the system is. But complaining, you know, about it, you know, complaining about Notre Dame because they're Notre Dame, it's either you love them or you hate them. And, you know, I understand that. But, you know, Notre Dame wouldn't get any play right now except for this. And I think the committee.
Thank you for the call, Roy. We appreciate your insight. We had to cut you off there because we do have to get to Barry Trotz. 615-737.
You made some good points, though.
Yeah.
He did?
Yeah.
615-737-1025. Predators GM Barry Trotz will join us in just a matter of moments right here at Barrel House. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025 The Game.